Wanna know, won't you take me there?
Welcome, everybody, to Spiral Network Talk Radio. I'm Tambourine Borelli, and I'm going to be with you for the next hour. We are very lucky tonight to have a beautiful guest. You know, Spiral Network is about many things, inspiration, esoteric matter, all the questions, the great questions that people in this day are being inspired to ask. Tonight's guest is in the realm of inspiration, and she's a beautiful woman named Elise Ballard, who is an actress, independent filmmaker, and producer. She started her career working as an actress in New York, Austin, and Los Angeles before moving to production work. But we're not here tonight to talk about her film work. We're here to talk about the latest book that she's done. And it's really cool because not only is the name called Epiphany, but she basically has garnered many different stories of different individuals' epiphanies. Basically, I mean, my God, I'm just looking here at some of the people she has, from public figures like Maya Angelou and Deepak Chopra and Ali McGraw and even Barry Manilow. Wow. To personal acquaintances and lifelong friends, to new contacts made in the most unexpected and serendipitous of circumstances. You know, I have found that dealing with the everyday people and the miracles that happen within their lives, especially when it comes down to the realms of epiphanies, because it's those epiphanies that really catapult us into the next version of our, pardon me, reality. So without any further ado, I want to bring on Elise and welcome her to the show. Elise, thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
So, Elise, tell me first, what inspired you to collect these stories of epiphanies? Was it something personal within your life or having to do with a personal epiphany yourself, or what was the deal?
Yeah, I had an epiphany. I was so amazed. You know, in the moment that I had the epiphany, it wasn't like some people, they have the epiphany and they realize, oh my God, I've just had an epiphany. But for me, about 2 months later, I woke up and just looked around me and was like, how did I get here? My life was so completely different. And my mind flashed back to this moment. And I remembered the instant that really everything changed for me. And I went, oh my God, I had an epiphany. That is what they talk about when they talk about epiphanies. And I was so amazed that this one instant had really changed me so much to where I had changed my life so drastically within, you know, weeks, that I started asking other people about their epiphanies. And as you brought up, I come from a background of filmmaking and acting, and I started asking, you know, my friends and colleagues just in everyday conversation, do you think you've ever had an epiphany? And their stories were so interesting. And I was shooting a lot of, as a filmmaker, I do a lot of these documentary sort of verite little guerrilla, you know, really low budget independent films that I do. And in doing those, I started asking people sort of on the fly what they thought their greatest epiphany in life was. They had no preparation. I would just ask them while we were talking about other things. And it was, they were so compelling and so interesting, even without having given it much thought. And so then what inspired it for me to take it further was that not only were they interesting in that moment and when you look at them on camera and such, but later I would find myself thinking about these stories unexpectedly. You know, my mind would wander to them, or I would find myself in a situation where whatever they had told me, I was realizing that what they had told me, what they had learned from these stories and these epiphanies, I was able to apply in my life. And I started realizing that some of these epiphanies were some of people's greatest wisdom. And so I was like, God, these are really helping me. I may really have something here. Not only are they remarkable stories and entertaining, you know, as a filmmaker, they're entertaining and compelling, but they were also, you know, really helpful. They were really helping me. And I was learning a lot about different things, not only about myself and having this wisdom utilized in my life, but also about many different areas of life. You know, I interviewed people from science and entertainment and literature and politics and religion. I started interviewing people from all walks of life. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I was developing this. Someone was interested in developing it as a reality show or documentary. And then the book idea came up. They said, well, you know, then you could always spin out the best ideas into a book. And I was like, oh yeah, I could. That's a great idea. And the long and short of it is that the book just kept going, you know, first. Although I filmed a lot of the interviews and they're on my website. I have about, you know, half the interviews that are in the book are filmed and are on the website. And then there are some other people that are in the book. They're on the website also. So the film idea is still kind of going, but the book just really took off. And that's why we have the book today.
Well, sweetie, let me ask you this. I mean, I'm looking at the list of people. There's some very compelling people that you have on this list. I'm just looking at Clive Davis, the mogul of what's the record label that he is?
He's with Sony.
He's with Sony. That's what I thought. Yeah. You know, people from different walks of life. You know, he's music, entertainment. Judy Orloff is a medical intuitive. Mm-hmm. And of course, everyone knows who Deepak is. So my question would be, you even have Dr. Oz on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Maya Angelou and Barry Manilow, Desmond Tutu. I mean, with all these different figures that are in such vastly different areas and fields, did you find a common thread that was present within each of their epiphanies, or were they pretty much just individual in within their own right?
Both. But there are threads. There are many threads you'll find. And I think that every story will strike people differently, depending on who you are and where you are in your life, and what your belief systems are as well. But the four things that I found in every single epiphany that changed someone's life, you know, you can have an epiphany. By definition, it's a moment of sudden or great revelation. You know, that's the dictionary definition. And right. I put the definitions in them, but if it changes your life, and everybody in this book, their epiphany changed their life. Cause I was asking about their greatest epiphanies and the ones that impacted their lives the most. And so in asking that, I found that, you know, all the epiphanies had changed everyone's lives. And the four things that every single person, no matter who they were, the four things that there were everyone was listening or paying attention or open to the experience, to the revelation, to the message, however you want to define it. The second thing was they all believed in that moment, what it meant to them, the truth of it for them, the lesson or the wisdom that it was for them. And no matter what it was, they believed in it 100% in that moment when it happened, and they never had a doubt about it to this day. And the third thing that they did was that every single person took action on it. So you can have an epiphany, but if you don't take action on it, it won't necessarily change your life or anyone else's life around you. So every single person took action on it. And most of the time, no one knew. They took the first step and no one knew what the second step would be. You know, none of us really had any clue what would happen next. We just were compelled by what we felt the truth of these revelations were for us, and then took action on them by taking the first baby step. And then the fourth thing that happens is that serendipity comes into play, and you find that, I call it the world conspiring to support you. And you'll find the next step is revealed, and the next step and the next step. And it's sort of, you see this amazing serendipity in your life, as if, you know, it's like confirming that what you heard or what you felt or what you, you know, were compelled to do was the right thing for you, and you're on purpose. So those are the four things. And then I would say that the other thing about everybody's epiphany, if you really want to boil it down, you know, is about love, you know,
mm-hmm.
love. Different forms of love, but, you know, love of self, love of others, love of humanity, love of the divine, You know, it's different for love of their work, you know, but, it, you know, it always boils down to love and connection. And then, you know, change. Everybody had change, right? It's all about, at least that's what I found in my work. And then those four things I talked about. And this faith, you know, there's a faith also, this faith, whether it's just in the moment, you know, then usually leads to a belief in themselves, you know, if they didn't already have it. So those are big things that you'll find is the themes of these things.
It's very ironic. And based on what you just said, I now feel compelled to share an epiphany of my own
that
totally embodies everything that you just said. On the first note, it came on the tail end of A Dark Night of the Soul, where, you know, for those that have never heard that term before, it's the state of being where everything of life as you've known it crumbles. And nothing that you were engaged in at the time is happening anymore. The people, the places, the line of work, whatever your vision was at the time, like everything had crumbled at that time. And I was pretty much just, you know, twisting in the wind. And, you know, it came off a period of time where I was really in an ambitious state of, you know, finishing a book and going out and traveling around and doing workshops and, you know, stuff like that, that in retrospect, still had a little sliver of ego attached to it. You know, the person who is responsible for giving other people revelations, the person who's responsible of being the one that enlightens someone else, you know, although there's a degree of that was true, there still was a little hint of ego. So it all just came crumbling down. And the epiphany was, you know what? Maybe being a light to the world is being the nobody in terms of, you know, like the master sometimes is a janitor pushing a broom. And, you know, maybe the wise thing he has to say to the child that is leaving class last that changes that child's life in a very humble, non-assuming, non-limelight kind of way is the most profound thing. So within that, I had an inspiration to create in my own community a place where people could come and do all of the things that we all share, no matter what we call ourselves, whatever religion we are, whatever creed we are, that the one thing that we share when we are singing, when we are dancing, when we are doing theater, when we are laughing, sharing a cup of coffee with a friend, all of those things erase all of the titles that separate us. And so I endeavored to create something like that here in my hometown without any means in the beginning and strictly, just as you said, on faith and the passion to see it through. And honestly, heaven and earth have aligned to miraculously just make this the most profound and beautiful place in this little town in Washington that I can only say that everything you just said is absolutely 100% true.
Yeah. Wow. See, yeah, that's so cool. I'd love to get your epiphany, like interview you for the next book. Yeah. But yeah, you see, I would put yours just from hearing that in the section of the book called The Callings, you know. I don't know the ins and outs of the details of it, but yeah. And you see how those four things happened? It's interesting, isn't it?
It totally is. And for people to read that in your book, in terms of what you have here, you know, all, I think it's so profound that not only did you include, you know, people who are household names, but everyday people, you know, and when everyday people open this book and read how, no matter if you are a superstar or if, you know, only your family and friends know who you are, that inspiration is inspiration. And listening to that inner voice and following it always ends up in the same equation, the answer of the equation, you know, which is a fulfilling, of a vision, of a dream, of a hope, of a prayer.
Yeah, it leads to, I just have to say, from what I can, what I've observed and experienced, it leads to a fulfilling life, you know, a fulfilling way of living, as is listening to, you know, whatever, your inner voice, your higher self, other people, you know, that, you know, I think really listening to the world around you is important, you know, and being present to it. And you're absolutely right. It's so important. I had a teacher, I was thinking about this today, that, you know, she said, and it so goes in with epiphanies in a way, because she used to say, if not now, when? If not now, when?
Right. You know?
And it's like, when are we going to listen, you know, and take initiative and trust? And I say that to myself a lot. And then Maya Angelou, as I say a lot, you know, there's nothing good that we can't do. Whenever I get discouraged, you know, or scared, there's nothing good that we can't do. That's true. Funny. Yeah. And I think that, you know, you bring up the point about, you know, household names versus everyday people. And I think what the other thing that I've learned just from doing this project is that, you know, extraordinary people are also ordinary. And ordinary people, which I don't even believe in the word ordinary anyway, but when people bring that up to me, I just say, and ordinary people are extraordinary. You know, it's like we're all extraordinary beings. We really are, everyone, you know, and are doing amazing things in our lives. And as, you know, G.W. Bailey says, is the story that opens my book, when one life changes, many lives are changed. You can affect, you know, many, many people. You don't even know how far reaching the effects are of what you're doing, you know?
God, it's so true.
Yeah. And I've just had the privilege of sort of observing this since I've interviewed so many people, and so many people are kind of connected that I end up interviewing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting to observe this and experience it firsthand without just hearing about it or reading about it, but actually experiencing it and realizing it's absolutely true that we all are connected in one way or another.
Was there any one in particular that inspired you the most out of everyone that you interviewed?
You know, I would have to say nothing inspired me the most, because, you know, I've been collecting interviews now for several years. And so, and then in writing them, so what happens is, and you might realize this too, as time goes on and other people that have had some time to sit with them now, is that, like, one epiphany that completely affected me and changed my life, because all these epiphanies, I have to say, and I'm not just saying this, and I know it might sound trite and not real, but it's absolutely the truth. Every single one of the stories in this book has affected my life and has helped me and has changed me in some way or another. And even though I couldn't even put all the ones in the book that I wanted to, we just didn't have enough room. And so that happened. And then the other thing is that at different times in my life, some of them were, you know, one that was so impactful on me at one point in my life, you know, then later another one had just as a big of an impact just because I was at a different point in my life, you know?
Absolutely.
So that happened and is happening still. Sometimes now I'll be like, oh my gosh, what Florence said, this is what that means. And this is, and you just find a deeper meaning in it. It is so interesting how deep and how the depth and the breadth of these things and how it just keeps going, you know, for me. And I'm probably the one that's lived with them the longest, but I'll be interested to hear other people's feedback about that once the book's had life out in the world, you know. But that's been my experience. If you want to talk about the ones that have meant the most to me, you know, like right now, you know, the last two that I did were Maya Angelou's and Desmond Tutu's. I got them like right under the wire. theirs were about, you know, and Barry Manilow's actually. And theirs were all about love, if you think about it, and different forms of love. And, but Maya Angelou's and Desmond Tutu's were about divine love and what that meant to them. And what it still means to them, and how that's energized them and been a building block on the foundation of their lives. And it still is, and they still meditate on it and think about it. And, you know, for me, this is, I guess it's sort of personal, but I guess these stories are all really on the, as you've seen, on the side of being very personal and intimate stories usually. And for me, I just realized, it just struck me as I was working with these stories that I had never really delved into what that meant for me. You know, I happen to believe in the divine. You know, not everyone I interviewed in my book does, and that's fine. I'm interviewing people from all walks of life and belief systems, and all the epiphanies are amazing and are valid and have different sort of wisdom and messages. But at that point in my life, I realized that I had never really thought about it on this deeper level that they were talking about. And I don't know why I didn't. I, you know, what that meant to me and what that meant in the bigger picture, and, you know, how you, like Desmond Tutu says, it's just mind-blowing, you know. And like I said, as I said that Maya Angelou said, you know, I am, her epiphany was, I am loved by love itself. There's nothing good that I can't do. You know, and to think, well, there is nothing good that we can't do. I mean, that's true. I've realized that from this project, interviewing all these amazing people. You know, it's renewed my faith in humanity, really, to realize how magnificent, you know, everyone I talk to is. I don't care who they were. And the stories people are writing into me on the website. And, you know, the interviewers, people like you that I'm talking to, it's just like renewed my whole faith in, you know, humanity. And, you know, even with this crazy stuff that goes on, like what just happened in Arizona, and, you know, the world seems, you know, so crazy sometimes. And, you know, and in my own life, you know, I'll get, you know, discouraged or overwhelmed. And I go back to a lot of times what she had to say, there is nothing good that we can't do. And I start spiraling up, you know, I start getting re-energized, and, you know, it just has really helped me. So I would say that those two have been really powerful for me in the most recent days. And then some of the ones also in the callings, David Hudgens is a big one for me, because, again, I'm entrepreneurial. This is my first book and I haven't known what to expect. And, you know, it's been such a cool ride, but it's all kind of new. And as you know, as an entrepreneur and putting out your thing too, you know, his is, you have to believe in yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself, no one else is going to. So go for it, you know? So he has a very interesting story where he quit his job as a lawyer with children, you know, in his late 30s, and started over started writing, and, you know, had no idea, had never done it before. And now he is one of the top television writers and producers in the entertainment business right now. So, wow. You know, but his story comes out of, you know, you'll read it, but, or you have read it, but anyway, so those I would say are three, but a lot of the callings have meant a lot to me because of where I am in my life right now. A lot of those stories have meant a lot to me, but all of them come to my mind quite a bit. So, but, you know, I want to give you some examples.
What was Deepak's epiphany?
Oh, I love Deepak's. Deepak's was such an interesting interview because I think it lasted like maybe 6 minutes. I mean, it was so straight to the point and brilliant.
Short and sweet, as they say.
It was so short that I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't get what I needed. And then I worked with it and went, amazing. You know, he completely practices what he preaches. You know how he, you know, his whole thing is about being very clear and living in your own truth and like executing it with precision, you know, in so many words, right? But his epiphany is about people can heal themselves. That is what his takeaway is. And he did it. His epiphany happened while he was walking. He does a walking meditation every morning. He said sometimes it can only be 10 minutes, but he usually walks 10 minutes to, you know, half an hour every single morning. And he got this hit that people can heal themselves. And it's very interesting. He's one of the first people that started really putting it out there. And he also started studying it scientifically, and his whole body of work and his whole life focus has been developing and proving this and spreading the word that people can actually heal themselves, again, by focusing on love and joy and loving themselves. A lot of the medical healings that have come through epiphanies that you'll read about in the book have to do with this self-love. It comes down to true self-love and true self-acceptance and true self-compassion. And he's, as we all know, or a lot of people know, he's one of the four, one of the foremost people that started talking about this and studying it and putting it out there. The other thing that's interesting, Deepak, personally for me, is that a lot of times it's best for me to go walking. I'm not one of these people that can sit down and meditate for half an hour. It just can't still my mind very easily. And I remember his epiphany, that's what he does. I mean, he probably does it other ways too, but he does this walking meditation every morning. So I try to practice that more as much as I can. So anyway, yeah.
Interesting is that, in a walking meditative state, it, on a scientific level, puts your brain in an alpha state, which has been known to help to bypass the gatekeeper, as it were, the subconscious. So say if there was something that you were wanting to change, when you're in that meditative state, it is very helpful to be able to introduce new concepts and your desire to wanting to shift certain aspects of yourself when you are in that state. So Deepak knows a little something.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, he's pretty amazing. And I loved that's what, he did. Because for me, like I said, I'm not a very good, but you're absolutely right. A lot of the people in the book got their epiphanies in meditation or in prayer, or right after prayer, and again, or in crisis a lot of times, like you were saying, the dark night of the soul, because we're open and we're listening, and we're asking.
Right.
And, and you'll that saying, ask and you shall receive, but there's something to that, obviously, and people ask me. And again, the first thing that I've noticed about getting everybody was in a state of listening, of paying attention, of wanting answers, and trying to be open to them. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we get these from crisis, because we're finally, it'll either knock us upside the head, so we listen,
sometimes we need that. Is that not true? Some of us have hard heads, boy.
Yeah. Or we finally will listen, and you realize a lot of times that things have happened to try to get your attention, but you wouldn't listen, or you pushed it down, or you didn't believe it. Right. I mean, at least that's absolutely in my life. And a lot of people I talk to, like we knew and we ignored our inner voice or signs or our epiphanies, oh, that's too crazy. Oh, that isn't real. But on paper, that's not rational or whatever. And then finally, life will get your attention, So,
That reminds me of the piece in your book that was written by Judith Orloff. I want to talk about her when we come back. We're going to take a break now. We're speaking with Elise Ballard, author of Epiphany. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We'll take a break.
Matrix of illusion, so much pain and self-abuse, forgotten who we are in this delusion, so we continue to play the charade. There's always someone that does it better, likes more their reflection in the mirror.
Welcome back. You're listening to Spiral Network Talk Radio, and tonight we are with Elise Ballard, author of Epiphany. And Elise, welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much.
You know, before the break, we were talking about not just trusting yourself and, you know, having faith within that intuitive epiphany, but, you know, what is that really necessary for? Is sometimes, you know, there's a lot of outward, for lack of a better word, resistance from whether it be family or friends or coworkers or employers or anyone in our life that has the power that we give them to diffuse what that intuitive hit is. And that brought me to Judith Orloff, who is featured in your book, The Medical Intuitive. Mm-hmm. And her story really touched me because, you know, here's this woman, she, you know, paid her dues, 14 years of all the different, you know, pre-med, medical school, post-grad, internship, had a successful psychiatry business. And all along, she had this innate ability, this profound intuition that she found in one instance that when she did not use it, it actually, well, let me just continue to say, when she did not use it, it was because she feared the outlash or the backlash, rather, for sounding weird or really the influence of her mother telling her, you know, don't do that. I don't want people to think you're weird, or her not wanting to be associated with, you know, quote, psychics or healers, for say, because, you know, the truth is, up until maybe just recently, if you use those words, psychic or healer, they would think you're a crackpot. So, you know, this profound gift that she had, turns out on her mother's deathbed, the mother shares with her daughter and lets her know that although her whole life she had discouraged Judith from using that gift, it was a gift that not only her mother had, but all the women in her family had. So it was a very natural thing. And the only reason why she discouraged her, because she didn't want to see her daughter go through unnecessary ridicule. So it's such a profound statement and story in regard to trusting that no matter what anyone says, because when she did use her intuition, it helped and saved many lives and enhanced many lives. So, you know, her Judith in particular, I really, really enjoyed her piece in Epiphany.
Yeah, I found a lot of power in her interview as well. I thought it was, it meant a lot to me. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, most of us probably have parents, and her mom was doing what she thought was best for Judith. You know, she did it out of love, but, you know, she was acting out of fear. And the other thing about Judith that meant a lot to me has to do with the project as a whole, because it is a prime example. I really encourage people, and I'm sure you might have noticed this in the introduction, that I encourage people to tell their epiphany stories or to ask about them, especially with their loved ones, you know, especially with their parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles or even their kids and their spouses. A lot of people that told me their stories had never told anyone their stories before. A lot.
Wow.
And a lot of the people that I talked to them about, you know, were people in my life that I loved. And I learned so much about them. And when your parents share these stories, as in Judith's case, you know, you learn so much about yourself. You know, for parents, and they keep secrets from us sometimes, thinking that they're doing doing us a favor. But in reality, we get such freedom from knowing these stories. And I just encourage people to ask their families. You know, another person in my book is Florence Horn. She's my eldest interviewee. I interviewed her. She was 91. And wow. She wrote me and said, you know, thank you so much for interviewing me and including me in this book. My family found out stuff about me they never knew before.
And oh, wow. How cool is that?
Yeah. And a lot of my friends are talking to their parents about it. I learned about my parents' epiphanies I'd never knew about. And you get such insight. And again, I say that in the introduction to Judas. Their stories, your family and loved ones' stories are your stories too, and vice versa. You know, they're part of who you are. And if you can get the stories out, you just get such insight into them as people and then into yourself. And in Judith's case, it had to do with her gifts. You know, these are like inherited gifts she'd had, and her entire family that she knew nothing about was practicing these gifts. And it opened up a whole new world for her, and such a healing and a freedom, you know, in her life. And it led to the book and so many other things. And like you said, has now touched thousands of lives in different ways. So it's really powerful stuff. I'm so glad you brought that one up. And I think she's a prime example of sharing these stories with people if you can, or asking people, you know?
Yeah, totally. Let me ask you this, Elise, you know, your epiphany in regard to how amazing we all are. And moreover, the common thread that you have found within everyone that you interviewed being love itself in one shade or another. Yeah. Having said that, what is your take on this time that we're living in terms of potentially the root of these epiphanies and where these epiphanies are leading all of us into this new era, this new way of being, you know, us with each other, us with nature, us with, you know, all of animals, us with, you know, everything, all of us being, as you said, in terms of the realization, how we really are all connected. And, you know, of course, not just as people, but every living thing, how we all are connected in this web of love, if you want to call it love, because it absolutely does resonate with love. What is your take on that? Where do you think we're going in terms of that?
Well, you know, okay, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert in this field or whatever, but I will tell you my opinion and what I'm observing and what I have observed and sort of things that I'm putting together, you know, again, my opinions and that I'm putting together. But, you know, first of all, we're living in such amazing times. As I was saying before, like, isn't this cool? We're talking on Skype with this, you know, in different states in real time. And that we can do this. And I'm having people having that. You said you called it a web too. And then we have the web, we have the internet. One of the reasons this project has always been so exciting to me, I've always dreamt of it living on the web, no matter if it was a documentary or a television show and a book and all of that. Also, it would always live on the web because everyone can go watch. We can go watch each other's stories. You know, people from Africa are emailing me in remote villages, you know, wow. They have access now. What are the epiphanies that are going on in Africa? What about China? What about India? You know, and then what about the music moguls in New York or in the Appalachians or, you know, in Kansas? I mean, we can all go see each other's epiphanies. What can we learn from each other? How are we different? How are we the same, you know, and rejoice in those things? You know, I think we're in a time also where we are so divided so much about religion and politics. And I'm so tired of that. I think that we're all unique and very different. And we all have different beliefs. We all have different, you know, experiences and backgrounds and ways of life. But at the same time, and this epiphany is just this study, and I didn't even realize this would happen, but it's like this become the study for me of how different and unique we all are, and we're coming from different places, yet we're also all the same. And I think that that's so beautiful. And I think that we can rejoice again. We can rejoice in how different we all are and learn from each other in different ways about what everybody's doing and researching and learning, and learn some of their wisdom that they've had from their epiphanies and their challenges and their lessons. And you can learn from that, even though they're completely different from you and have nothing in common in the way of the world. You know what I mean? And because epiphanies, are, as you boil them down in the beginning of every epiphany in the book, there's, you know, one or two sentences of wisdom that it boils down to that we all can relate to usually. So I think that is, it's, you know, an interesting thing to really see how the web internet is actually really connecting us and how we can actually see how we really are so connected physically. We can actually experience it and see the fruits of our change, you know, things that we do in our lives and how it might affect someone, you know, across the world. So that's one of the things. And I think too, the other thing I've discovered and that I've come to believe is that we do all come in with gifts and talents, you know, these unique gifts and talents that are uniquely ours. And that I've read about this for years. I've heard about it for years, you know, that we all have, you know, a purpose and that we come in with these gifts and talents. And I didn't know if I necessarily believed it. And now I do. Because of so many people that I've interviewed. And when someone seems to get on purpose, you know, through, sometimes people don't have to have an epiphany to get on purpose, but, you know, because of mainly that's what I'm talking about. But when they do, their life is so fulfilling, you know, and I use the word fulfilling and not happy because I think happy is overused in our culture. I think that we have moments of pure joy and happiness, but the goal in life is to live a life of fulfillment, because you're going to have low points, I would think, if you're a halfway feeling person. So you're going right. to, you know, have, you know what I mean? So if you're really it's like life, you're not going to be happy all the time. And people beat themselves up for that. And
exactly. Like beat ourselves
up. But the key is to live a fulfilling life, meaning that, you know, you feel on purpose, you're utilizing your gifts and talents in some way. And what happens is, and I saw this over and over again, is that you're energized by that. And in doing that, their personal lives are usually fulfilling as well. And then that spills over. And a lot of people then reach out in much bigger ways outside of their personal lives and their careers, but with nonprofits or in volunteer work or just accidentally serving other people. It just happens, it seems to me. So I would just encourage people. And also, speaking from personal experience, I cannot tell you how many times I ignored my epiphanies or ignored my inner voice or was too scared, you know, to do anything about them over and over again. And I wasted a lot of time, you know, and I don't want that for other people. And I just encourage everyone to listen to their inner voices and to read these stories or ask people in their lives about their epiphanies. And you'll find, you know, go to the my website and you can go listen to a lot of the people talk too. You know, and just listen to your own inner voice or to people around you that are supporting that. And you don't, you know, you also don't have to talk about your epiphanies. A lot of the people didn't before now. Like you were saying, if people outside of you discourage you, you don't have to talk about it, but just to find the courage to act on them. Because as that teacher said to me, you know, if not now, when? And I think it's a very important time on the planet to be getting this, you know, to be listening, to be getting on purpose, to be utilizing your gifts and talents because we need them. And, I really do. That's just my belief. And I find that people are more fulfilled in life, and I want that for everyone, you know. And I think somehow if we all came in with these gifts and talents and we found them and we developed them and we were utilizing them, that maybe we're going to build this perfect tapestry, you know, that everyone's got a purpose within the tapestry.
You know, I just want to interject there in terms of, you know, because one of the main reasons, if you ask 10 out of 10 people, I would say at least 8 would say that when they have not followed through on their dream or, you know, whatever their intuitive hit is, it's that fear of either failing or not being good enough or there's no way I can do this. Or I think that once we understand that nothing we do ever is wrong, you know, even if we screw up, even if we fall on our face, even if, you know, we're embarrassed or whatever, it's all a part of what you just said, the tapestry. Those moments of excruciating pain that I've experienced, there is no way I could have the wealth of fulfillment that I do now if not having experienced the other side of the coin. It's all good. It really is all for purposeful good. And if we know that, then it really has a good chance of taking away the fear of moving forward. Because it's like, you know what? Whatever it's going to be me experiencing whatever there is to experience, not labeling it good or bad or right or wrong, but experience for mm-hmm. the sake of it. You know, it's like in my heart, I believe that's what our soul is here to do, experiencing everything on every side of the coin so we can have compassion for everything and everyone that we see. We can never then judge anyone because we've been there and we know. And then that means we have compassion for ourselves. And as you spoke on self-love, that really is the key to everything in terms of fulfillment.
Well, and that brings us back. I mean, that brings me back to like Desmond Tutu says, God loves us all no matter what. And he said, we have no enemies. We make that up. You know, and you know, it's that. And also, Kristen Neff has this amazing epiphany about self-compassion. And you brought up compassion. And I think that it starts, you know, I'd never really heard of self-compassion before I heard her epiphany. And she's now a leading psychologist because of her epiphany in introducing self-compassion into Western psychology. No one had really done research on it. It was only like a Buddhist tenet, you know? And this idea of self-compassion is really powerful stuff because, as she said, what triggered her epiphany was someone said, if you don't have compassion for yourself, you can't really have compassion for others. And that's, I think, what you're talking about, that you're saying we judge ourselves and we're so hard on ourselves, you know, when we mess up or we make mistakes, you know. And she says, she brings up, you know, you wouldn't talk half as harshly as you talk to yourself. You wouldn't talk half as bad to a person outside of you. You wouldn't talk half as harshly to your best friend. Why are you doing it to yourself? You know, stop it. And that has been a really powerful one for me because, yeah, it comes back to this self-compassion, having compassion for yourself as if you were your own best friend.
That's right. It really is key to the whole thing. And mm-hmm. I'm looking, we're just running out of time. But before we go, Elise, I want to give you an opportunity to share with the listeners every way they can get your book and anything that you're up to that you want to let people know about and how to contact you.
Oh, great. Well, you can go to my website. It's www.epiphanychannel.com, epiphanychannel.com. And you can see all my book signings I'm doing. I'm going to Dallas and Austin, New Orleans, San Francisco. You can sign up for Facebook and Twitter. I have a blog. You can send me your epiphanies. You can write them. You can put people's epiphanies down, you know, suggestions of people's epiphanies you want to know about. I've gotten some great, some people that have suggested people I've actually interviewed. So it really is really interesting. I love that. And it can be anybody. And you can even video your epiphanies and I can go watch them. You can just send me a link. And, you know, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and just sort of we're developing a community there. And you can go watch videos of a lot of the people. Everybody's photo is on there. Links to all their websites. So you can go research further what these amazing people are doing. And also research just different subjects about different things in life. I've learned a lot about different areas of life from these people. And so I'm hoping that the website is also a research for people in that way as well. So, and you can email me, my email's on there and, you know, and like I said, Facebook and all of that. So I'd love for people's feedback. I'd love to find out what you thought about the book if you get it or go watch the videos and give me feedback there. So, you know, I just want people to, if they want to learn and get inspired as much as I have from it. And I really appreciate you having me on. And is there anything else you want me to talk about or is there any information I missed giving you that you need?
No, you did great, sweetheart. Thank you for the opportunity to share the hour with you because you absolutely inspired me and I appreciate you and the work that you do from my heart.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, I hope I get to meet you in person soon.
I hope so too.
Yeah, maybe I'll do another, you know, West Coast one and you can come to that one.
That would be beautiful, sweetie. Again, Elise Ballard is with us. Check her out. Go get her book. It's amazing. And If you somehow didn't get that information, you can always archive this show, or you can email me. My information is on the network here at bbsradio.com. Otherwise, everyone have a beautiful evening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Elise. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.